We'll get to 2 Esdras, but I'm still in Daniel. Since Esdras goes beyond Daniel, we better get to the point in Daniel that is fully revealed, and then we'll look at the three-headed eagle. Daniel, chapter 8. Last Sunday, I concentrated on the power, the beast, the demon, the prince of Grecia, and the prince of Persia, the real power behind these kingdoms. Now let's look at the kingdoms. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel. I saw in a vision, it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river Ulai. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran into him in the fury of his power, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them, that is, out of the four, came forth a little horn which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great even to the hosts of the heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of the transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Now, well, not the best frame. This is all pictured right here. Perhaps my greatest work of art. The golden image of Nebuchadnezzar, with the golden head, breast and arms of silver, belly and sides of brass, thighs of iron, feet of iron and clay, and 10 toes. And we learn from Daniel 2, where that prophecy is given, that God will set up his kingdom, the stone kingdom, in the time of those 10 kings. Therefore, those 10 kings cannot have been already, because the stone kingdom is not yet in existence. It smashes all of these kingdoms to the ground and grinds them to powder. Those kingdoms, the gold, Rome, the silver, Medo-Persian, the brass, Greece, the iron, Rome, the ten-toed kingdom, a confederacy, out of the geographic area of ancient Rome, yet to be assembled. You see that, don't you? The next prophecy was given to Daniel. In that prophecy, he saw the kingdoms as beasts. Interestingly enough, that was preceded by a vision by Nebuchadnezzar, in which, because of his pride and being lifted up and failure to recognize God's control on history and God's gift of anything, including power, he was smitten. He did go insane for 4 years, but not for seven. And the prophecy was given that seven times would pass over a beastly kingdom. Seven times, we preached on it, I needn't go through it again and again. Seven times represents 2,520 years. All right, there it is. How am I doing? You see, some artists can't even interpret their own art. How am I doing, Ed? My art's gonna be worth more to this church than that stupid license. I mean, isn't it something? God gives me a gift. Very weak they take it, my art will be worth more than that license. ...2,520 years of beastly rule. You know, when you gestalt God's book, instead of just taking it a piece at a time, you see the little hints that God gives. After the vision, in which God lets it be known that the insanity of beastly kingdoms will rule for 2,520 years, the next vision that Daniel sees is of beastly kingdoms. You think that's an accident? The first is a lion. The second is a bear rising up higher on one shoulder with three ribs in its mouth. The third is a leopard. The fourth is a nondescript beast. It just simply cannot be related to any living known beast. It doesn't get a full description. Its power and its nature is described. Give me just a hair, but not very much. But we don't get a description. It cannot be identified as the lion, the bear, and the leopard with known beasts. Now, when we get to it, 2 Ezra, that was part of the King James when it was translated, taken out by the Puritans, finally axed completely by the British and American Bible societies, that second book of Ezra describes this nondescript beast in its further history as a three-headed eagle. Impressionist or abstract extension of reality. But that's a later subject. This nondescript beast has 10 horns. And out of these 10 horns, a reconstituted confederacy of nations out of the geographic area of the Roman Empire, three of them are suddenly uprooted by a little horn. Antichrist will not come on the scene with world war. He will come on the scene by uprooting three kingdoms that represent three of the 10 that form a loose confederacy out of the geographic area formerly ruled by the nondescript beast, by the legs of iron, the Roman Empire. Now, what's that do to the fear of a Holocaust? There won't be one. There won't be one. Christians of all people should be certain. There won't be one. If there is no eternity and there is no God, what difference does it make? And if there is eternity and there is a God and He has revealed Himself, He makes it clear. There is yet to come a 10-toed, 10-horned, horns are the symbol of power, toes the symbol of outgrowth, as well as horns are a symbol of outgrowth. They will be recognizable, identifiable as coming up in the territory formerly occupied by the ancient Roman Empire. A Holocaust would leave the world unrecognizable. There isn't going to be one. Nobody's going to punch that button. The Russians are not going to destroy us. We're not going to destroy them. It ain't going to happen. Well, what if man gets out of control? He won't. And for the end, to make sure he doesn't, God will shorten the time. The Bible continues to be confirmed every day of history. By the way, you notice they just found out, they just discovered accidentally while they were looking for something else, carbon particles 65 million years ago of a massive burn, no doubt following a stellar collision with this earth that wiped out the dinosaurs. And darkness, nuclear cold, followed. That's exactly what Genesis has been saying for a long time. The beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Period. When's the beginning? I don't know. 650 billion years ago? Bishop Usher didn't write the Bible. It had nothing to do with the age of the earth. You don't have to cut your head off and believe that God created the earth in 4004 B.C. Anybody knows better than that. That has any access to scholarship. Second verse of Genesis says, the earth became a waste and a desolation. Oh, I thought it was, the earth was without form and void. Same exact Hebrew words in Jeremiah are translated, the earth became a waste and a desolation. Context determines its meaning. We know that Genesis 1-2 was not the creation, because Satan has fallen. And yet Isaiah and Ezekiel let us glimpse him prior to the fall. And God's Word declares he was in Eden while he was still the crowning cherub of the mountain of God. We've always said Satan and his angelic crowd dwelling in Eden could handle dinosaurs. We couldn't. I don't really think Adam had to deal with dinosaurs. He didn't have to put any of them on the ark. Now, would you like to float around with one of them? But they were here. In that period before Genesis 1-2. And the earth became a waste and a desolation, and darkness of it over the face of the earth. There's been a Holocaust here. And Jesus talks about it. I beheld Satan fall from heaven as lightning. He grew lifted up in pride, and God smote him. Through the Bible, you look back through the eons of time, and through the Bible, You look ahead to God's control over this reconstituted earth that He will one day reconstitute anew. We know that no nuclear holocaust is going to come because the 10 kingdoms must arise. And within those 10, one little horn will rise up and uproot 3 of them. The others will give Him His kingdom. He won't have to fight for it. There won't be a world war bringing in Antichrist. He will be the solver of conflict. He will offer a peace plan that will cause the 7 remaining nations to hand Him a chairmanship, a rulership, a leadership role over the Confederacy voluntarily after He uproots 3. Now, look for someone uprooting 3. When you're looking for Antichrist. Now, this chapter that we're just in focuses in on 2 of the kingdoms. The silver of the shoulders and arms, the brass of the belly and sides, the bear and the leopard. Translates them into new beastly forms, ram, goat. Now remember that now. That's where we are. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Tell me I don't have a sophisticated audience. They can figure that out. Some congregations would have to be told what that means. Not you. Now this bear is none other than the Medo-Persian Empire. It rises up one shoulder higher than the other to symbolize the Persians rose up and conquered the Medes and welded them into one. It holds in its mouth 3 ribs, which I can find in history, are conquering tribal sections as Cyrus came to power. And it is incapable of being stopped. Then suddenly it's powerless. It's a goat that comes on the scene, and the bear has become a ram. In this passage, the twofold nature of the Medo-Persian kingdom is symbolized by horns on the head of the ram. One horn comes up later than the other one, but rises higher, to symbolize that Cyrus united the Persians and the Medes weakened by their ability to win over the Assyrians, but weakened thereby, and the northern plateaus of Iran are now conquered by Cyrus' Persian hordes, and the Medo-Persian Empire is united with the younger horn, symbol of power, rising above the older horn, but it still is an amalgamation of 2. Now that ram has power like the bear. Nothing can stand in front of it. Then instantly, it is powerless. Last Sunday, we told you why. In the prayer that is answered, the angel comes and tells Daniel he heard his prayer 3 weeks earlier, but the prince of Persia withstood him. Not some earthly prince. We get our clue. Because he says, Michael, the chief of the princes, came to stand with me. And everybody knows Michael and this angel are angels. Michael being the chief angel. It's evil, demon, fallen angel princes that they fought. After delivering his message, Michael's in a holding action. The angel says to Daniel, I'm going to go back now and fight the prince of Persia. And when I leave, lo, the prince of Grecia comes. Now, we skipped ahead to Revelation. 200 million demons are chained in the area of the Euphrates River. They will be released during the tribulation. Just maybe they were bound in this battle described by Daniel. And I said, that angel, you remember, said, nobody stood with me save your prince, Michael. Where were all the rest of God's angels? Just two of them. But if two of them could bind 200 million demons, Satan is bound. My friend, Satan is bound. We are on the winning side. We're on the winning side, I warn you. Why did the goat find the ram so powerless? Because the goat arrived led and empowered by an evil demon prince. For the angel who talked to Daniel said, I'm going back to fight the prince of Persia, and when I leave, he's no more. Lo, the prince of Grecia comes. The prince of Persia, the evil demon, was bound by Michael and that angel. And when the prince of Grecia came, the demon power that enabled Alexander the Great to move with such swiftness, he met only human resistance. The superhuman demon prince had been bound. There was no fight. It's like Joe Louis taking on a newborn baby. Alexander the Great was empowered by an evil demon force, just as the prince of Persia was. The beastly kingdoms would rule for 2,520 years. Seven times would pass over them. And when Alexander the Great, the belly and sides of brass, Alexander the Great, the leopard, Alexander the Great, the goat, came conquering into Persia, there was no power to resist him. There was a notable horn, specifically and accurately. Alexander the Great was that notable horn. In the prime of his victory, having conquered the ram, this goat with the notable horn has the horn broken off. And in its place came up four notable ones. You know the history. Alexander the Great's kingdom was divided among his four generals. Two of them, one in Thrace, one in Greece proper. Two of them we hardly hear anything about. The microscope of God's prophecy focuses in on only two of the four horns that grow up to replace the notable horn. Those two are the Seleucids. Now we have balanced this art. Are the Seleucids who reigned in Antioch and Babylon. That portion of the ancient Grecian kingdom that extended from Mesopotamia up into Syria and across to the coast of Lebanon and southern Turkey. That was the Seleucid kingdom given to the general Seleucus, one of the four that inherited the kingdom from Alexander the Great. The other strong kingdom consisted of the general Ptolemy. You'll encounter the Ptolemies in the days of Cleopatra the Great. And Cleopatra was of the line of the Seleucids, given as a wife to a Ptolemaic king, thinking it would bring an alliance, and she sided with the Romans against her own family, the Seleucids. And the history of the whole Middle Eastern area, after the breaking off of the notable horn, which was Alexander the Great, reduces down to these two generals, the Ptolemaic and Seleucus portions that become the Seleucid kingdom and the Ptolemaic kingdom of Egypt, and caught in between is the Holy Land. The other two generals in Thrace and Greece tend to move off to the edge of the horizon and are going to be swallowed up first and quickly by the Romans, that beast, when it comes on the scene. Say, what's your authority for this? Bible? History? He asks, what is this? Go to the 19th verse. As he was speaking with me, the revealer now, he said, behold, I will make thee, Daniel. Am I boring you? Know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed, the end shall be. God runs by the clock. The ram which thou sawest, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, Alexander the Great. Verse 21, Daniel 8. Now that being broken, that's the notable horn, Alexander the Great, who died, let's all do it. Now that being broken, the notable horn, which is Alexander the Great, whereas four stood up for it. Four kingdoms being interpreted for the four horns who stand up. Four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but underline these words, but not in his power. Say it with me. Not in his power. What? They're just so-so rulers. Powerful, but powerful as men go. I'm sure helped by lesser beings within the hierarchy of demonology. But the Prince of Grecia is no more as the Prince of Persia that empowered the ram, who was the bear, became no more when the angel who came to Daniel and Michael defeated him. When Alexander the Great died, the notable horn, that demon called the Prince of Grecia, is not empowering his generals. That demon didn't, like a cell, divide into four demons. Clearly the Bible says these generals will not have the power of Alexander the Great. They're entrenched. They rule a conquered domain. They have the history behind them of Alexander's greatness, his policies of neutrality toward religions where he went. But they still can't hold it. Alexander, in a day, it seems, relative to the stream of history, conquers the world and sits down and weeps. His generals can't even hold the territory. They don't have his power. Demons. Paul said it. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. You cannot credit Alexander the Great, as you cannot credit the power of the ram before it was taken away from him. You cannot credit Alexander the Great with mere human generalship. And that beast that empowered him did not go into his generals. And we have Seleucid left, Ptolemy left, and the other two generals that we won't hear much about. Now that being broken, the notable horn, verse 22, whereas four stand up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, whose kingdom? These four generals. In the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Got that? He is going to be like the ruler of Persia, empowered by the prince of Persia. He is going to be like Alexander the Great, the ruler of Greece, empowered by the prince of Grecia that would come. He is going to be empowered by an evil prince that makes him superhuman, not by his own power. He shall destroy wonderfully, shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. Daniel fainted and was sick over this. Now, you ought to have it in your margin of your Bible, verse 23. You ought to have it written there. We're not dealing with an ordinary being. And if you read the rest of the chapter, you find that what this little horn, this evil prince, does is analogous to what the one who uproots the three horns in the previous vision does. And we know that the one who uproots the three horns out of the ten is acting in the days of the ten kings, which is at the end of time, so the gap is engendered. And when we come to this vision of the ram and the goat, the little horn who uproots, the little horn who comes up in the midst of the four, does things that push him to the end of time, and we're encountering Antichrist. Out of one of them, verse 9, out of one of them who? Follow me closely, because I won't have to go back to this. Out of the four horns, the generals, right? Out of the four horns, the generals, the kings who follow Alexander the Great in the latter days of their kingdom, out of the four will come one. Now we know from what he does that this one is the same little horn that comes up and uproots three of the ten in the previous vision. And we know that if he uproots three of the ten, he is acting in the last days, because the ten horns, three of which he uproots, are analogous to, identical to, the ten toes, which represents the ten kings in the first vision of Daniel 2, which must occur at the end of time, which is a prelude to God setting up his eternal kingdom. So we have an Antichrist picture who does his work in the time of the ten kings, who uproots three of them and receives a gift of rulership over the others. And we learn that this little horn, who will act in the time of the ten kings, must come up in the midst of the four. So now we have a geographic location as well as a time for Antichrist. He must come out of one of these four kingdoms, the Seleucid, the Ptolemaic, or the other two generals we don't hear much about. Somewhere out of the ancient Grecian kingdom will come a little horn out of the midst of these four. From the earlier prophecy of the Ten Horn Kingdom, he will uproot three kingdoms that represent a confederacy out of the Roman Empire, and he will be empowered with a demon force, not human. Now you go to Daniel 11. Take my word for it. The angel now starts to prophesy. No vision. The angel is prophesying. The entire passages of chapter 11, your image now changes from an image of gold, silver, bronze, and iron, and clay, from beasts, lion, bear, leopard, nondescript, ram, goat. He now speaks only of the King of the North and the King of the South. As the telescope of God's prophecy moved from the world to just the two kingdoms, the Medo-Persian and the Grecian, to set the stage for identifying a splintering into four kingdoms and identifying the geographic area, that out of those four sections turned over to the generals under Alexander the Great will come Antichrist, who is the one who will uproot three of the 10 kingdoms that grow out of the Roman Empire. We now, in the 11th chapter, have focused even more narrowly, not on Persia and Greece, but on only two of the four successor kingdoms to the Grecian kingdom of Alexander the Great. For in the 11th chapter, the king of the north is the Seleucid kingdom. The king of the south, the Egyptian kingdom. And the king of the north takes the shape of Antichrist and prevails over the king of the south. And we have God's word through the mouth of the angel in the 11th chapter identifying the geographic area out of which Antichrist will come as the kingdom called the Seleucid kingdom of ancient Greece. That means Antichrist will come out of northwest Iran, northwest or northern Iraq, Syria, eastern Lebanon, or southern and eastern Turkey. God's word gestalted takes us from the line of world history as it associates with those beastly kingdoms out of Nebuchadnezzar, who will rise up to leave in the beastly promises or prophecies of Daniel, brought into focus as God comes to the culmination of last days, to the importance of the conflict between the Persian and the Grecian kingdom, to let us know that it is a conflict between demon forces that rule through the agency of man, narrowed down to the two sub-kingdoms of ancient Greece that enable us to identify Antichrist as coming out of the Seleucid kingdom from the midst of the four. The 11th chapter of Daniel says which one, and that Antichrist will receive a confederacy of at least seven of these 10-toed kingdoms, will uproot three kingdoms as an introduction to his power, and will be ruled by a demon force. Now go to Revelation. Chapter 17, page 307, if you have a Bible like mine. Are you catching the gestalt? There came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials. We're in the latter day of the tribulation now. And talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, and I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore, the false church that preaches humanism and the need to bow down to government as necessary to getting on in this life, buying and selling, and take their number, which is a mark of possession. That false prophet leads the church called the Great Whore, that sitteth upon many waters, rules many people. That's why I've asked this church take the pattern of the Great Whore, only serve its master, instead of Antichrist. He carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. Describes the great whore and her name, her history. And he was astonished, never having seen anything like that. The angel said unto me, "Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman," this false church, "and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast that thou sawest with the 7 heads and 10 horns, the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, evil deeds." Now that, as you've heard me say many times, has caused some amateur Bible scholars, in quotes, to suggest that Antichrist will be a human that suffers an assassination attempt, is shot in the head, or sustains a great wound in the head, and then recovers. And every time Gaddafi gets shot at, people write a book. When Kennedy was shot, people said, "There it is. The ruler wounded in the head." Kennedy didn't come out of the bottomless pit. I don't care what your political views. Even Gaddafi didn't come out of the bottomless pit. He came out of a womb, just like the rest of us. This beast that has 7 heads and 10 horns, this beast comes out of the bottomless pit. There's only one word in the Greek, abyss. Make sure you can find it after I write it. Abyss. Our English word is a cognate of the Greek word, translated bottomless pit. It's only one word. The beast that thou sawest was. One time he was here. John's writing in the first century. And is not. He wasn't there when John was writing. But he shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, lead the path of evil. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder. Out of the bottomless pit. Now, when Jesus came, he encountered demons. And on one occasion they cried out, "Are you come to ascend us, to send us or assign us to the abyss, bottomless pit, before our time?" Revelation 20, John says, "I saw an angel having a great chain in his hand and the key to the bottomless pit. And he laid hold on that old serpent and Satan. Cast him, bound him 1,000 years, cast him into the bottomless pit." In the Revelation, an angel will come with a key, open the abyss, and the smoke will rise, and demon locusts will come forth. Intelligent evil demons with the ability to read the mark in the forehead of the 144,000 that are sealed will be gone. They'll be here, but they'll be sealed. And distinguished between them and hurt all the rest of mankind. The bottomless pit is where Satan will be chained 1,000 years during the millennium, then to be released for a short season. That bottomless pit is where the demon, the Prince of Grecia, went when the notable horn was cut off, because he was sent to the bottomless pit as the princes of Persia were chained near the Euphrates River area. They too will be released in tribulation. But out of this bottomless pit, from which will come Abaddon and his horde of locust demons, there will come forth this beast. When Alexander fell, the prince of Grecia went there. He was in the time of Alexander. He is not in the time of John because he's in the bottomless pit. In the time of this little horn, he will come out of that pit, possess literally Antichrist, and lead him into perdition. Now, go back. Am I boring you? Chapter 13. I don't think I want that. Save that till next Sunday. Let's go on with this one. I was going to take you back and show you the history of that beast, but let's go on. The beast that thou sawest, can you follow it with me now? Was when? In Alexander the Great. Is not in John's day. Why? He's in the bottomless pit. Shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Yet to come. Got it? And he will empower Antichrist. I am going to go to the 13th chapter. Go back. I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And upon his horns 10 crowns, upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, because its essential nature is the nature of the Grecian kingdom, because that beast will move in and possess the successor to the Seleucid kingdom out of Alexander the Great's kingdom. His feet were as the feet of a bear. He will stand geographically in the ancient territory of the Medo-Persian Empire. That's why we can't get that thorn of Iran and Iraq out of our eye. His mouth is the mouth of a lion. The religion of Babylon will rule, a religion of works. And the dragon, Satan himself, gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads representing the kingdoms through which this beast ruled, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. There's your picture again. Was wounded in the head, is not. Deadly wound healed, the picture, he will rise again. That figure is the demon force that ruled Alexander the Great, is now in the pit, will come out and empower him. That's why Antichrist is not some boy with blazing eyes. He will come up. The spirit of Antichrist is at work in the land. He'll receive help from the prince of the power of the air in general. He will uproot 3 kingdoms. He will be given his kingdom. Then he'll be possessed and go into perdition as the evil beast possesses him. Here is the mind which hath wisdom. Back to 17, chapter 17, verse 9. Revelation 17, 9. Here is the mind which hath wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. We're talking about the 7-headed beast. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. On which the woman said it. Let's do it together now. And there are 7 kings. Now watch it close. 5 are fallen. 1 is, John is teaching. The other is not yet come. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. Let's look at those seven. God looks in this book at kingdoms as they affect his people. This beast is the beast ruled by Satan, empowered by Satan, through which Satan works in earthly kingdoms to oppose and oppress the revealed plan of God. God shows us his oracle, Abram and his descendants. So you find your point of departure at Abram and the people, and in the tribulation, God is dealing with the seed of Abraham, the house of Israel, and the house of Egypt. As Ezekiel 37 says, become one stick. The church is gone. The focus now is to finish in an atoning work of affliction, because they would not accept the atoning work of Christ. The work on this world that is the wrath of God outpoured. Now the subject being Israel, both houses, seed of Abraham. Therefore, the seven kingdoms, these heads, represent the kingdoms that have oppressed the seed of Abraham. The first took them into bondage. Egypt. Right? The second took the house of Israel into bondage. Assyria. Right? The third took the house of Judah into bondage. Babylon. Right? The fourth continued to hold them in bondage and oppress them. Medo-Persian. Right? The fifth brought bondage and persecution again of the beastly kingdoms, Greece. Right? The sixth held Palestine under its foot in the days of Christ, Rome. Right? That's six. Now, in the kingdoms of beastly kingdoms from Nebuchadnezzar, you start with Babylon. But Israel was oppressed before Babylon by Egypt and Assyria. Right? So these start with Babylon. The beast that Daniel saw, the lion, starts with Babylon. The beast of the ram and the goat starts with Medo-Persian. The prophecy of the angel himself starts with the Seleucid and the Ptolemy kingdoms of the north and the south. Now in Revelation, it goes back to the beginning. Let's read it. This beast, seven kings, five are fallen. Who are the five? Go on, say it with me. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persian, Greece. One is, who was ruling while he prophesied? Rome. The other's not yet come when John is writing. It's the eighth kingdom. We know what it is. It's the ten-toed kingdom. The last days kingdom that's a prelude to Antichrist. It's not here yet. That's the seventh kingdom. He must continue a short space. Next Sunday I'll lead you to that kingdom, show you what a short space it rules. That seventh kingdom yields or rules for a very short time. Now the beast that was in Alexander, come on, the beast, I'm reading in the 11th verse, and the beast that was in Alexander is not in the bottomless pit. Even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, because he ruled the fifth kingdom, which is Greece. He is of the seven. He empowered Alexander the Great. He was and is not. Even he is of the seven. And goeth into perdition. Well, we already been told who he is then. The beast that thou sawest that was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. Antichrist is that eighth king. We now know that this ten-toed kingdom of the last days will be of short duration. I'll show you that next Sunday. We know that of this ten-toed kingdom in the last days, a little horn will uproot three of them. We know that that little horn now comes out of the Seleucid portion of the Grecian kingdom, and having uprooted three of the ten in the last days, will be given a confederacy, a rulership, because he has an answer for peace. And that kingdom will last a very short time. As soon as they hand over to him the reins of power or control, and we know that he will come out of northwest Iran, north Iraq, eastern Syria, southeastern Turkey, eastern Lebanon, whomever that may be, he will uproot three, be given a confederacy leadership. Iron and clay means it's not very strong and molded together. That kingdom will exist a very short time, and the beast from the pit at that point will ascend. That demon will possess this ruler of the remainder of the ten-toed kingdom that has a short existence, and he will assert himself in his Antichrist role. That's the eighth kingdom. He will think it is a new beginning. Then John saw heaven open in Revelation 19. Nine is the number of divine manifestation multiplied. A ninth kingdom will come. King of kings and Lord of lords. He will come to execute judgment. We'll be behind him. I will ask specifically for a certain bureaucratic office for me to ascend to, descend to. And an angel will descend from heaven, lay hold on that old serpent which is the dragon and devil, bind him 1,000 years, shut him in the bottomless pit, and usher in the kingdom of the King of Kings. We're on the winning side. Satan's bound. I'll be looking at you tonight.